Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to the Behind the Skies podcast. I'm Josh, and today I sit down with music producer Rare Bear. Rare Bear has gained over 35,000 subscribers on YouTube, has major record placements with artists like Fora, Rod Wave, Snot, and many more, and makes his own vocal tracks and beats that he shares with his fans on major streaming platforms. Rare Bear specializes in raw, emotion-invoking music that takes on its own life and really has a one-of-a-kind sound. Today, we chat about Rare Bear's background, why he started music, and producing with a minimalistic approach. Without further ado, enjoy the show. What's going on, guys? Today I am joined with Rare Bear, a fellow producer friend of mine. How you doing, man?
Doing really good, man. I'm honored to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, of course. Thank you for joining us today. So let's delve right in. I was thinking, so we'll start with where are you from?
I'm from Albany, New York, man. Born and raised, capital of New York State.
There you go. Is that more of like a suburbs area?
It's a small city, man. It's the capital of New York, so there's like little sections. There's like the little arts section, the little like that's where bands play. There's a lot of like, you know, New York State workers, so that's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of colleges. There's UAlbany. There's Siena. There's Hudson Valley, and then we're in the capital region. So you got Troy, New York, you got Schenectady, and you got Albany. But yeah, I lived my whole life here. I went to school in Oneonta, which is like a state school in the middle of the mountains. So I studied like psychology and music there. But then I came back here after college, and I've been playing in bands and just making beats pretty much ever since. So I really love this area, man. Like, you can go to New York City in 3 hours. You can go to Boston. You can go to Montreal. You can go to Buffalo. It's kind of like this really cool midpoint in the middle of the Hudson Valley of New York, and Hudson Valley is beautiful too. So I feel like it's sort of this this like super super low key area that's really good for creatives, and the cost of living is pretty cheap too. So I'm lucky that I'm just from here.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, finding that home is an important part of life, I think.
For sure.
Cool. And what got you into making music in the first place?
When I was younger, man, like between the ages of probably like 8 and 14, I was always into baseball. Like, that was my thing. I was super into sports and super into baseball, and honestly, like, I didn't really think much about music. Like, my dad was really into Frank Sinatra, and my mom listened to the radio and stuff, but I never really, like, I didn't really come from parents that like forced me to play music or whatever. My parents are super super like supportive and super cool. They're the best. They kind of, like, when I was into baseball, they let me do that. And then, like, my older brother, he's the one that really kind of turned me into music, because he started playing drums when I was 14, and he's 2 years older than me. His name's Dave, and he's kind of like a legend in his own regard. He's got his own, like, thing going on with it in the aviation field, but he's done a lot. He's like a true Renaissance man, you know? Like, he does planes, and he was an air traffic controller, but he started a band back when I was 14 and told me basically just to, like, grab a bass guitar. He was like, yo, we need a bass player in our band. Just get a bass. And I essentially had no idea what a bass even was. I had, like, no inspiration or anything. But that was kind of like when I was winding down with baseball, because, like, I don't know. I think when you get older with sports, you start to realize, like, I wanted to do something creative. And I really love sports, but I didn't like the idea that, like, you were super reliant on teammates. And you're super reliant on, like, man, you could be the best batter in the world, but if your team's terrible, you're going to lose. And I feel like for me, that slowly got more and more frustrating. So, and I wasn't the best baseball player in the world, but I was like, I loved it. You know, I like kind of dedicated my life to it. So I was sort of searching for that next thing to sort of become obsessed with. And when my brother was like, yo, buy a bass, I just kind of like did it. You know, I was like, I'm just going to do this and see what happens. And again, like, I wasn't super inspired musically to do it. I was inspired more of like a change in my life. So when I first got the bass, like, I didn't really know what songs to learn, so I was listening to the radio at the time. And that was like, man, I don't know, that was like Pink, Like a Pill, and like Alien Ant Farm's version of Smooth Criminal, and like stuff like that. So I started learning, and then I got into the Chili Peppers, and so once, as a bass player, I got into the Chili Peppers, it was like, all right, that's pretty sweet. And then from there, I started playing acoustic guitar when I got into college, and that sort of taught me how to like write songs and sort of taught me how to be a songwriter. And then after that, I started messing around with like synthesizers, and I started messing around with multi-tracking recording. So then from there, I sort of had like the bass playing down. I had the acoustic guitar songwriter part down. And then from there, that was probably my earliest memory of sort of like producer, because I had this old Tascam 8-track recorder, and I was layering acoustic guitar, and I was layering vocals, and I was layering just like sort of any shakers I could find to sort of make like a full song. And I started doing keyboards and stuff like that. So I guess my brothers telling me to get a bass when I was 14, like, totally started it. But from there on out,
yeah. Snowball effect after that.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like, he's still a huge influence on me. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, even the computer monitors that I have, or like the mixing monitors I have, like the Mackies, the 8R824s, they're his. You know what I'm saying? Like, and even his recording desk, the recording desk that I use, it's still his. So, like, I ended up kind of stealing, like, a lot of his equipment and just, like, sort of making it mine.
Yeah, just rolling with it.
Yeah, so he kind of, like, you know, and I was lucky, man. Like, being, like, 14 and 15 and 16 and, like, learning bass and being in his band, he started getting into producer, like, he started getting into recording. So then from there, like, I was around somebody who knew how to record, somebody who was obsessed with, like, EQ, somebody who was buying these crazy preamps off of eBay. And I didn't even know what that stuff was, but I sort of was around it since I was like 14, just being around him. So then when I started recording my own music, it was sort of like a natural progression, you know?
Yeah, and I think having that, that's the same with, like we talked about earlier, my stepbrother. I mean, he, before I, when I made music, it was just kind of throwing things together and boom, that's it.
Yeah.
And having that like support system of someone to kind of guide you in the right direction is super important. And
yeah,
and having that is definitely a thing to be grateful of.
Yeah, for real. So it was kind of like that. And then from there, like, you know, when I started to try to, like, I got into beats and I started bands myself, and I was in a band, I'm still in a band called Titanics, and like we toured like pretty extensively. Like, we toured down the East Coast, we went all the way down to Florida and back like two or three times, and it was totally self-booked. Like, I booked the whole thing myself. We didn't have a booking agent, we didn't have a manager, we didn't have a label, we didn't have anything, man. It was just me, like, pretty much waking up at like 5 a.m. and just emailing venues and emailing booking agents and emailing other bands trying to set it up. So once I set it up, it was like, I don't know, man, like I always kind of had that entrepreneur like blood once I got into music, because once I got into music, I was like, I sort of knew that's what I wanted to do. You know, there was nothing else.
Hand in hand.
Like, for sure.
Making music is the first step, but then monetizing it is a massive step in that.
Oh, 100%, man. 100%. Like, you know, and for right when I got out of college, which was 2012, that's when I graduated college. Like, I started working at this music shop. I was repairing violins at this place called John Keel Music in Albany. And like, it was pretty cool, man. Like, don't get me wrong, it was a pretty chill job, and it was very low pressure. I was basically just like repairing, I was like restringing violins and like getting them ready to be rented. It was a rental company. But I knew that I wanted to, like, do music full-time. I knew that I wanted to make music. That was, like, my calling, you know? That's what I had been doing my whole life, you know? Because ever since I basically was 14, I'd been making these recordings, but I didn't really know what to do with them. So a lot of those recordings became songs for my band, and a lot of the other ones sort of just sat on a hard drive, man. So, like, once I started seeing online back in 2014, or I guess 2015, like, how to sell beats online, it was sort of like a no-brainer for me to try to get into that, because it was something that I had been doing so naturally my whole life. So when I saw that calling, I was like, oh yeah, this is what I'm going to try to start doing. So
yeah, from there, shoot for it.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start that channel? Or your current channel, of course.
I started my channel February 2015.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Or maybe March 2015. But yeah, that's when I started like really uploading, you know, and at the time, that was like Migos type beat, Drake type beat. Trying to think of what else people were doing. But I remember kind of seeing like a pretty open gap in the market pretty early, because I was like, I saw that nobody else was doing live guitar, and nobody else was. It was all kind of like this FL Studio sort of, like, you know, really early trap stuff. So I started doing live
guitar. Yeah.
I started doing live guitar, man. I was like, I'm going to be the first person to, or at least that I saw, just trying to do live guitar. And I started putting out tons of stuff like that.
And it just, I guess you caught that niche group, however you pronounce it. And
yeah.
Ran with it.
Yes, sir. That's right.
That's pretty sweet. So what is like your average creative process look like for your day?
For me, like, you know, like I said, man, like, I come from a background where, like, when I was working at 9 to 5 repairing violins, like, I'd wake up at 5. It was a 9 to 5. So, I, you know, it was like I'd wake up at like 8:30 and I'd get to work, and I would just be off from there, and I would just do it. But I would come back on my lunch breaks, man, and I would just make beats for like a half an hour. So when I finally had that opening where I was like, I want to know that I make beats, I started waking up at like 6 a.m. just to make beats before I went to work. And then I would come back and I'd make beats on my lunch break. And then I would come back later that night and I'd brew coffee at like 2 a.m, man. And I would make beats all the way into the night just to get like content for my channel. And then I'd post stuff up there. Yeah. But now, like, I quit my job in 2016, man. So that's when I really, that's when I was like financially ready, I think. And I saw the trajectory that if I did beats full time, it would sort of take off. So now, you know, I wake up in the morning, man, like, make some coffee, and I pretty much just work on beats for the first like 4 or 5 hours of the day, I would say. I just treat it like a normal job, man. Like, you know, regardless of my inspiration or not, I kind of just wake up and go. I sort of just, you know, get some coffee, I listen to a couple songs, maybe listen to a couple other beats or whatever, and I sit down and I start working.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Because I'm the same way. I like to have a very structured day, like, you know, work during the week, take off the weekends, and create by, you know, kind of forcing myself almost. Because that's how you just get things done.
I think you have to, man. Like, and that's not to say that I'm inspired every single day, but man, like, I kind of approach it like I'm blessed to be able to do this. So once I quit my job, I feel like this is what I do. So if I don't make a beat every day, or at least every other day, I feel like I'm not really working. You know, I feel like I'm morally responsible for creating, you know?
Yeah, and now you mean an extensive fan base as well. You're kind of like, okay, well, these people might also be relying on me getting stuff out to them. And it's, you know,
deliver
to them.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And like, I've seen that with your channel, and I've seen that with Stoic, and I see it with Versus too. Like, because listen to those interviews the other day, and it's so true, man. Like, I feel like the whole YouTube game kind of comes down to, everyone says it over and over again, it's being really, really consistent. But I feel like ultimately, man, the thing is, if you want to be able to do it full time, you sort of need to deserve it. You know, I don't think there's any sort of other way to put it besides, if you start today and you just release quality, unique content every day for the next 6 months, year, maybe 2 years, you'll start seeing results, you would hope. You know, I mean, that to me is almost the mindset that I always have. And so far it's been slow and steady, man. But I don't ever really intend on stopping, because it's something that I've dedicated myself to, and it's just slowly working. So, and I enjoy it too, man. I enjoy it. There's something about it that I think puts me in a good headspace to sort of turn off to the world and just make music and then put it out there. There's two different ways of thinking. It's like, I create the beat and then you put it out to the world and you see how other people interpret it. You know, it's funny to me how there's almost two sides to that coin.
It's so cool to finish it and have a completely different perspective in your head. And then you might get a song back and you'd be like, whoa, this is like, that is kind of why that's my favorite part, is getting music back from artists.
Yeah, no, it's cool to see an artist interpretation, and it's cool to see just like on, YouTube or social media, like what resonates with certain people. Because I try not to judge my own work too hard, but there have been times where I would record something and I'd be like, it seems off, or it seems like the rhythm is off, or for whatever reason, I personally don't recognize like what the X factor in it is that somebody would love. And I'll put it out there and it'll be like my biggest beat, man. I think that it's crazy to me how consistently wrong I am in judging my own work.
I'm the same way. The stuff that blows up, the stuff that doesn't blow up are the things that I put out and I'm like, oh, this is it. This is it.
yeah. And the more I talk to creatives, it's kind of like that too. So that's why for me, like, I think if I put something out and I don't know what's going to happen, or I'm not crazy about it, but other people love it, then clearly I can't judge my own work accurately as far as like what other people like. So that's why kind of early on I started adapting the idea, like, I'm just going to put everything out. Like, I'm just going to create stuff and put it out, because it's not really up to me to judge it. It's up to them. You know, my job is just to create. It's not to figure out if I like it or not. Like, if I like it, then great. If I don't like it, then who cares? I'm just going to put it out anyway. So
exactly. Yeah. And nine times out of 10, you'll come back to it and be like, oh, yeah, this isn't that bad.
yeah. Sometimes when you see other people vibing with it, you like can kind of get into it yourself. You're like, oh, actually, you know what? Yeah, this actually is pretty cool. I actually can't get at that. Yeah, man. But I don't know. I just feel like a whole part of the creative process is sort of to not think about that kind of stuff, man. Like, you know, it's just like a day, like good or like there are good days and there are bad days, you know, like sometimes I'm feeling it and sometimes I'm not. But it's like a photographer. Like, is the photographer's job to make the subject look great? I don't know, maybe, but I actually would argue a photographer's job is just to take pictures. You know what I mean? Just to accurately reflect like what's going on in front of the camera. So yeah. For me, it's like, I'm just recording music, you know, I'm just recording something. I'm going to put it out. And then, you know, this is what it sounded like on, you know, July 15th, 2020, you know, and in 7 years or 10 years, it might sound totally different, but I'm cool with that, you know?
Yeah. Music ages so differently in so many different genres and ways. It's crazy.
For sure.
But cool. That, I guess that is a nice intro into the topic we can chat about today, which is something that you seem to live by, which is minimalism in production and maybe even in life as well. So how do you make music in a minimalistic way?
For me, I think when you start thinking about the mindset of consistency with beats, or I guess with anything else, if you want to do something every single day, that's a really kind of bold goal to have. You know, that's a pretty ambitious thing to say, like, oh, I'm going to start this project, I'm going to do it every single day. Like, so for me, if you want to do that, there was this idea where if you can improve yourself by 1% every single day, or I guess I was reading this study, or it was a book that was talking about this study, and it was talking about cyclists. I think it was like Lance Armstrong style, like Tour de France type of things, you know. And this one team was consistently losing year after year after year, and they were just blowing it, you know. And they had this new coach that came on, and he was like, all we're going to do is we're going to try to improve every single aspect of cycling, or the way we cycle, 1% in every field. So what he did was he was just like, we're going to put 1% more air in our tires, or we're going to sleep 10 more minutes every day, you know. Or he even went to the extent of on the inside of their van, he would color it white every single week just so they could see the dust on their bike. Because he said that if there's dust on the bike, then they're not going to perform to their highest degree, you know. And they went on winning year after year after year. And it was totally studied, and everyone thought it was ridiculous how they went from just these little changes and they became so great. So for me, coming back to minimalism, I don't really think it has anything to do with adding different layers of synths or new plugins. Man, I don't even know what plugins I use. Like, I literally use Cubase plugins. I don't even know. Like, I'm if there's an opposite of a gearhead, like, that's me. Like, I've had these same speakers forever. I've had this same microphone forever. Shout out to this microphone. It's actually good, though. The AK, yeah. the C214, yeah. And the thing is, man, I always came from this background of recording music on this little Tascam 8-track recorder. And when I started recording music in that way, I learned that it's all in what you put into that recorder. It's not really the recorder that's going to make you a hero. So I've recorded a ton of stuff on GarageBand on my phone. Like, actually, one of my biggest placements with Fora, his track I Still Love You, I recorded guitar part for that. I recorded that on GarageBand, dude. I was on vacation with my parents. It took me like probably 15 minutes, and I recorded that into GarageBand. You could actually hear my dad in the background of that recorder. They pitched it for the sample because I had another producer who messed around with the sample. But you can hear my dad in the background. I recorded that directly into GarageBand, and I feel like not only do I appreciate the fact that it keeps things simple, but I think the minimalism and the iPhone itself has kind of given me this sort of unique sound in the beats. You know, very raw, man. Like, I'll record, like, right now I'm in my apartment, and I'm right near this porch, and I literally will record into my computer if I'm not using GarageBand. I'll just leave the door open. You know what I mean? Like, I'll literally just leave it so you can get that sort of outdoor sound. You know, every once in a while when a car goes by or something, I'll have to redo it, you know. But, like, even for the longest time, I didn't even care if that happened. I was like, I'm just going to record with my door open and just, like, whatever sounds sneak into this beat, I'm just going to keep.
And it would just be supernatural.
Supernatural, dude. And it kind of started off as like this experiment where I was like, what would happen if I just started releasing these beats like that? And people vibe with them, man, because I think that they're unique. And I also think that there's a certain like subconscious element that when people hear stuff that's really, really natural to the human ear, like, you just kind of like identify with it. So I started just doing that more and more. So now I have all these like sound recordings on my iPhone that I'll sneak into beats. Or again, like, man, I've had recordings where I literally will record an entire beat outside, you know, and people will say like, hey, can you remove the bird track, and I'll be like, yo, it's actually in the recording. It's not even...
And it's like, it's not possible.
Yeah, exactly. So most people like it, but some people are like, hey, can you remove that? And I'll be like, I actually can't, so... But the cool part is actually from a YouTube producer hack perspective, what I do is if I recorded a beat outside, it'll have like the birds and it'll have like sort of that outdoor ambiance to it. But I'll re-record it in the studio and I'll call it a clean version and I'll lease it again. So what happens is sometimes it's like I'll release a beat outside or like an outdoor version, and then a year later I'll re-record the whole beat in my studio and I'll release this the clean version, and then I'll just go all these leases again and it's essentially the same beat. That's like a little hack that I've done before, and I kind of like doing it. It kind of keeps things really interesting. It's weird.
Yeah, it's genius. And then that way someone can have a completely different take on it, like we talked about earlier. Someone can be like, oh, I want the clean version for this aspect, or I want the natural version because they want to go in that direction.
Yeah, 100%, man. And each recording is different. That's what's cool about it. Like, each recording concept has, like, a life of its own, so.
Yeah, that's super unique. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. And yeah, do you live, like, a minimalistic life, or is it more just in the music?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm too minimalist, to be honest with you, in my life. Like, even, like, right now, like, I bought a house last month, and I've been in this apartment, like, right now. The apartment that I'm currently in right now, I've lived in this apartment for 8 years. This apartment's in Albany. Like, ever since I graduated college, I've been basically living in this apartment. And, like, I live with my buddy who was in my band, and then he moved out about a year ago to live with his girlfriend, and then my girlfriend moved in here with me now. And then I bought like an 1880s sort of like Victorian era really big house, you know? So,
oh, that's cool though.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's got a lot of character.
Yeah. Oh, it totally does, man. And it's like the original house for that entire area. Like, it's been there. It's got a lot of character and a lot of history. And it's almost crazy to me because, like, for me, I've been living in this apartment for 8 years, and this is a pretty... I wouldn't say it's a small apartment, but, you know, like, it's not like the biggest place in the world. There's four other people who live in this house. Like, there's four units. Shout out to them too, because I've been recording music here for 8 years and they've never actually complained. It's actually kind of a miracle that never complained, to be totally honest with you. But I always say I'm EQing kick drums at like 3 a.m. and my neighbors were like, oh yeah, you know, like maybe one day I'll just like cut them a huge royalty check. That's what I told them one time. It was really funny. But
yeah, they'll be like, oh, it was all worth it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, man, like, you know, I think with the music, I try to keep it minimal because I just feel like, I don't know if you listen to Tim Ferriss, but he's got a really good podcast actually. But he believes in it's the theory of minimum effective dose. And what that means is like, what is the minimum change I can make that would have amazing results, you know? And he uses it more in terms of health. He uses it more in terms of like, you know, bodybuilding or things like that. But you can apply that to music, I think. And if you make these little minor changes to your music, it can make drastic, intense results. It's the 80-20 theory, which is Pareto's principle, is saying that you get 80% of your results from 20% of what you put out. And that actually kind of goes into my beats too, which is interesting. You could look at it like that, like 80% of my sales come from 20% of my catalog. And I've talked to other producers and they actually agree that they've seen that too. So it's really interesting, man.
Yeah, I completely agree. That is 100%.
You know, so I think as far as the minimum, the minimalism thing, for me, you also got to think in terms of the music. Like, if you're creating beats for a vocalist, a lot of the times they don't really want a lot of clutter. They don't really want a lot of instruments getting in the way of their vocal melody, you know, because a lot of great vocalists want to just layer their vocals and do their own thing. You know, they want to make it theirs.
Yeah, so, it's a whole nother instrument, essentially.
100%. So if you're kind of cluttering your production and making it like, you know, you're stuffing it with all the synths you can, then sometimes it's like you'll hear a vocalist say, yo, I really love this beat, but there's not really much I can do with it, you know? So
yeah.
So it's kind of a win-win if you can kind of keep it simple, but then also more people like it. Like, sometimes I think my simplest beats get licensed out the most, man. Like, I'll release beats... They like, you can't even call them beats, man. Like, they won't even have drums. Like, I'll release an instrumental, shall we say. I'll label it Frank Ocean type beat, and it'll just be three layered guitar parts for like 3.5 minutes. You know, there's no drums, there's no kick, there's no snare, there's nothing. And
people love it.
Yeah, and I think, man, like, you know, in all modesty, I'm the first producer to ever really just put out beats that have no drums.
I was just about to say that. I don't even think I have ever between me and my stepbrother, I don't think we've ever put out a beat that don't have drums.
Yeah. And it's crazy to me too, man, because when I first did it, it was kind of like a, it was kind of like an experiment, you know, it was like, or maybe I was just like, I'm just going to put out a, like, it sounded good before I put the drums in. I was like, I'm just going to put this out. And, like, it went crazy, dude. So, and for me, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to make a couple, you know, I'm going to make a couple and just, I sort of like double down on what's working, you know, like when I first started making beats, I was doing Frank Ocean type beat. I was doing Migos type beat or whatever. That's what was popular. But I made one, I made Drake type beats, Migo type beat. I made one Frank Ocean type beat and people liked it. So I was like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to make 500 Frank Ocean type beats. I remember actually thinking that to myself. Like, I made one Frank Ocean type beat and it worked. And I was like, I'm just going to make 500 of these and just see like what happens from there. And then, you know, like a year and a half later, I was still doing it. So,
and it was working.
For sure, man. You got to kind of like, you got to pick a lane and then just own it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did with the Mac Miller beats. I mean,
yeah.
I remember I posted one and people were like, oh, this is cool. And I was like, well, this is the best feedback I've ever gotten. So
yeah.
Let's go.
Double down on what's working, man. Like, I think when you first start, you got to try out a bunch of stuff. And then if one thing catches on, even if it's like a little bump, you know, like, hey, some people like this, whatever, just keep doing that. You know, you gotta find your lane and you're always sort of perfecting it. And then from there, man, like from there, I started making specifically Frank Ocean acoustic type beats. You know what I mean? So it's like now, not only in the Frank Ocean lane, now I'm doing Frank Ocean acoustic beats. And
it's
then
it's
kind of
another
like
market in itself.
Whole another market, man. So yeah, it's cool.
Me and Stoic were talking about that this morning. And it's like finding that comfortable lane, sticking to it, and then also just not being afraid to fall on your face and try something and be like, okay, well, that didn't work, because that's how you figure out what is going to work and what's going to stick. Is you got to just keep jumping off that cliff until something catches you.
Like when you first started dropping beats, like what were some of the artists that you were doing? Was it always Mac Miller, or you tried other ones too?
The first one I ever posted was a Frank Ocean, and I don't know if you've ever heard of the artist named Role Model.
No, I haven't. Nope.
Okay, so it was Frank Ocean and Role Model.
Role Model. Oh, yeah, dude. I actually knew. Oh, yeah. I thought you said somebody else. I do know Role Model. Yeah, dude. He's amazing.
I love that guy. Oh, he's so talented. And he's super, super underrated right now. But I think he's going to get his time soon.
Yo, he hit me up one time. He hit me up
really?
Once. He did, yeah. He hit me up one time. His manager, his name was Cole, I believe. Yeah, he was really cool, man. They were looking for like guitar parts and things like that. And then he went on to open up for this band called Laney. Lany. They're like this kind of like electronic indie pop band that I love, and he kind of blew up from there. But like about 2 years ago, he I was sending beats to him. Role Model. He's
pretty
dope,
cool.
Dude. Yeah, he's really dope, dude.
Yeah, he's kind of catching some light right now. I think he's got like 130,000 something followers on Instagram.
Yeah, his stuff is really good, man. I really like his what's the name of that one song I always love? It was on one of his like Summertime in Arizona EP. Do you know that one?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I think I've
Supermodel. That's what
music.
It's called. Supermodel.
Yep.
Supermodel.
Have you ever heard the 6-speed song?
Oh yeah, dude. They're all really
good.
Oh
man, that they're all he's got a nice catalog.
But, yeah, he's really, really good. He's really, really good. I love that kind of stuff though too, because like I feel like his music is a great example of he uses like acoustic guitars and he uses regular guitars, but he's also just a great singer and a great songwriter, you know?
And he keeps it, he doesn't do too much. It's pretty, I think he has a song called Minimal, and it's literally just a very minimal song.
You're right, dude. You're totally right. That's a great song. Yeah, it's awesome, man.
Yeah, and there's no need to overcomplicate things.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's dope.
Yeah.
Love it.
But yeah, so I posted Frank Ocean and Role Model. That was like my first one or two beats. And then I was doing mainly like Earl Sweatshirt because I wasn't really good at mixing. I didn't know what I was doing, and I could make things sound really, really shitty on purpose. it passed. And then eventually I just kind of did some Mac Miller Earl Sweatshirt, and they kind of caught on. I posted a beat, left for vacation, came back, and the beat had blown up, and it was a Mac Miller beat. And I was like, okay, this one worked. I'm just going to roll with it. So.
And then from there you doubled down on the Mac Miller beats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going hard on them up until probably 2 weeks ago. I mean, when my stepbrother came on, we were just cranking them out.
Yeah.
And then it kind of got to the point where it was like, okay, we're going to post one Mac Miller beat a week and then switch it up just to keep sane and have, you know, just try some new things and maybe catch another direction.
Right.
And so
I saw you just drop one. You drop a Steve Lacy type beat, right?
Yeah, that started as a Frank Ocean type beat.
Okay.
And then it turned into something extremely funky, and we were like, yeah, this is Steve Lacy. This works.
Yeah, man, like, it's one of those things that's funny because, when I first started doing Frank Ocean, that was before he even dropped Blonde. So, but there are a couple tracks on Blonde that are sort of, like, really woozy, almost no drums, kind of, like, almost like they have no sort of musical anchor musically, yeah, where it's like the songs vocals are moving a lot, and it's not like a beat. It's more of just like this ambient wash where these drums will come in and come out, and then all of a sudden something will kind of change. And I like that, man, because I like the idea of kind of not sticking to a certain structure when you're making beats, because it, you know, you're sort of driving the bus as far as creatively, like where the vocalist is going to go. So I think like I always appreciate when I see producers sort of taking risks. That's why I love Stoic, though, because I legitimately does like feel like a lot of the beats that he does are super, super unique in that sense where they don't really fit a mold. It's almost like you don't know where the sound is coming from. So he's super dope, man.
I think he just dropped a Tame Impala beat,
which I've
never seen. You know, you don't really see those types of beats too often.
He's super cool.
Yeah, before I met him, I was kind of I was so scared to take risks, and he's like, dude, just do it. Just take the risks. I'm like, all right, I'm going for it.
Yeah, man, he, it's funny because he reached out to me a couple months ago, I think, and he ended up just calling me on the phone because he lives down in New York. He lives in Staten Island, I believe, and we just started talking, man, and we started talking about, like, production, and we even started talking about taxes. You know, we started talking about, like, what it's really like to be, like, you know, like behind-the-scenes producer. Like,
taxes suck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're not even talking about tags anymore. We're not even talking about artwork. We're literally talking about, like, taxes and, like, or, you know, write-offs and, like, deductions and things like that. So,
like, normal conversations.
Yeah, like things
like
that
friends.
Actually. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, we started talking about that, and then we kind of, like, we have, like, a text, like, every once in a while, we'll just text each other and stuff like that, so it's really, really cool. But, he's dope. And then I saw Versus plays sax, man. That was sweet, too.
Yeah, there's so, I swear, some of the Type B producers, I always used to think that it was, you know, super, you know, mostly sample-based or this and that, but there's some insane talent. I mean, a lot of people just play live instruments and implement them in any way they can. It's cool to see that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
But you have some placements, I would assume, because you said you had one with Fora.
Yeah. Yeah, I've gotten some good ones. So I did one with Fora. That was the song, it's called I Still Love You. That was last February, I believe, and that was when I made an iPhone. And then I did one recently with a rapper named Snot. That was like one of my beats called Caress. What else? I did one with Jay Prince, who he's like a rapper from London. He's really, really dope. I did one with him. I did one with Rod Wave, actually.
Oh, wow.
On his album Hunger Games Part 2. And you know what's crazy, man? Like, so I have this lawyer that I have another couple placements that are coming out in the works right now, too. It's weird working with major labels and stuff like that, because I love working with indie artists just because it's simple. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a simple transaction of like, they want the beat, you know, they pay you, you send them that. And then like every once in a while, it's cool to even like critique their music if they record something to you and they send it back. Or with a major label, it's like, you know, you're going through a manager who's going through like the label, who's going through like the lawyer and blah, blah, blah. And like rarely do you ever even talk to the artist, which I think is always like really crazy. But, the Rod Wave one, that one I did, I think it was about 2 years ago, I want to say. And anyway, fast forward to when I was doing that Snot placement, I had this lawyer and he was asking me like who I work with. And I told him Rod Wave and he was like, oh, he's on the Billboard charts right now. And I was like, what? Like for what song? I didn't even know that. And Rod Wave's kind of blown up since then, dude, which is pretty crazy. So
He has. I think he had a couple hit songs this year that took him off.
Yeah, he had a song called Heart on Ice, I believe, which kind of took off. Yeah. So I did a track, it's called Boom. It's the last track of his Hunger Games Part 2. So yeah, that's really cool. But yeah, man, like the major label placements are great. Like they're really dope. I think I might be getting another one with Fora too. That would be really sweet. Cause, like,
Fora's,
you know,
really talented. He's cool.
Yeah, his merch is crazy, dude. Like, from an entrepreneur's perspective, I really like Fora, like the way he has a brand called Yours Truly, And dude, they go crazy with their hoodies and like their stuff. And whenever he drops merch, like people go nuts. It was actually cool. I was out in LA and I went to his store, his Yours Truly store. And I was walking around. It's like a small shop on Fairfax, I believe, out in LA. And all the hoodies, man, all the hoodies and all the t-shirts said, "I still love you" on them. And I was like looking at it and I was like, oh shit. I made that song. I made that song on my iPhone. You know, it was so weird.
Dude, that's got to be one of the coolest feelings in the world.
Yeah, it was really, really funny, dude. I took like a selfie and I sent it to my friend. I'm like, this is one of the weirdest experiences in my life, because it kind of proves like almost the power of the internet, dude. Because I literally recorded that beat, I told you, like on vacation with my parents and my brother and stuff. And then somehow Fora got it. And then it was this huge thing. And now here I am across the entire country. And I'm looking at this hoodie and it's like the lyric that he wrote to that beat that I made on my iPhone. And I'm like, man, the internet is a crazy thing.
It's like all of that is connected through just a bunch of wires between phones and computers.
Yeah, man. You know what I mean? It's just so wild, you know? So I'm blessed to I'm blessed to have the opportunity, dude. That's kind of what it boils down to, man. Like, I feel like for me, like to be able to create something and just put it out to the world and just see where it goes, it's just an incredible opportunity, man. It's just something that you really, I can't come to terms to take it for granted, you know? It's
just amazing. Oh my God, I completely agree. This is going to sound weird, but sometimes, I mean, when this all first kind of took off, it was like almost a tear-jerking thing, because it's like,
yeah,
the quantity of people who create things and put it out in the world, it's very slim. You have to like squeeze yourself in there and to be able to be someone who provides, you know, music and a creative aspect into things like that. It's just, yeah, it was an emotional moment when it kind of like first started getting recognized, especially because I've been making music since I was like 15 and just rapping in my room and just trying any way I could to make a living or something off of it.
And you know what's crazy, man? Like, I think, you know, I was blessed in the sense that when my brother was like, hey, you should buy a bass, when I was 14 years old, like for the first 10 years of me making music, whether it was my own recordings or me playing in his band or just me being in college, like jamming with kids or whatever, like I never cared about making money. And I think looking back, that was a blessing, because it sort of gave me the opportunity to really, really get good at music first. And then when I was ready to sort of start making it my career, I was already sort of like ripe as far as musically. I was like, oh, like I can, if somebody was like, I want a custom, I was like, I can do it. Like they need a guitar part, I could already do it. So the music part was never hard for me. What's hard is being able to kind of turn it into a career for most people, you know?
Yeah. To, like we said earlier, monetize that. And that was something I always struggled with. It was kind of like, I would try all these outlets and things. It's like, okay, I would put my own music out. Didn't really work. I learned something, moved on. Yeah. And eventually, you know, one thing catches and it's kind of like, okay, now how can you make this the biggest thing you possibly can?
It's it's always been multiple sources of income, man. Like I even have this ambient project. It's literally just super, super, super ambient music, almost like sleep yoga music. It's called Milk Sea Diva. And that's out there too. And like, I released some singles on Spotify and like, that's been on all these yoga playlists and things like that. And then I also do like this sort of lo-fi acoustic project where I sing. It's called City vs. Woods. And that's named after like my personal Instagram. And, I've always just been releasing music under different names, man, because I feel like with nowadays with Spotify and stuff, like I never really get like beat block and stuff, man, because I feel like if I'm not inspired, I'll literally just listen to music on Spotify for like 2 minutes. I'll just flip through playlists and I'm like, that's so dope. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to make something like that. Boom. And then I'm off. Yeah. Dude. And then I'm off.
You know? Just like watch a behind the scenes of someone else creating. That's something I've always done. And then it's like, okay, this guy's having a blast. I'm going to go have a blast now.
Yeah. It's really compelling to see somebody just like loving it. You know, you can't be in a bad mood when you see somebody in the studio is having a great, like, you know, having a great time vibing out. Like, and those Spotify playlists are nuts, dude. Like, you could like find a deep cut of some like Mac DeMarco demo that I love, and I'll be like, create radio station, and it'll be all these weird songs that are in the same vein as like that Mac DeMarco demo, and I'm like, my brain, like the creativity of my brain is just firing. I'm like, yo, I'm gonna make a whole album like this. Like, you know, I can't like listen to music without immediately being like, I need to like start making music right now, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah. You just want to get up or do something, or like watching a video that is in the direction of what I want to do makes me want to go do it.
Yeah, no, 100%, man, 100%. So, like, I for me, and you know, I don't mean to, like, romanticize it and say, like, I never, ever, ever get, like, into this zone where I'm not feeling it, because sometimes, like, in, you know, you're from the East, like, you know, in the middle of the January in the winter, sometimes I sit down, I'm like, bro, I'm not inspired right now. But the thing is, man, like, there are so many things you can do to get inspired. Like, another thing, man, is, like, for my artwork on YouTube, like, I always take the artwork photo myself with my iPhone. Like, I never...
I've noticed that.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Dude, because I always... Well, first of all, I was always really afraid of copyrights, because I always was like, man, I feel like if this channel blows up, which it just gets bigger and bigger in the next 5-10 years, like, I don't know what the rights are going to be with, like, copyright and photos and things like that. And for me, like, when I'm traveling and I'm on vacation or I'm, like, hanging out with my girlfriend or I'm just, like, doing whatever and, like, shopping or whatever, like, I love taking photos. I just think taking photos is a really cool way to just creatively, like, get in the zone and just, like, start messing around. So whenever I make a beat, I'm just, like, flipping through my photos and I'll, like, use these apps and I'll edit it and I'll be like, yo, I'm gonna use my own photos, man. Yo, crazy enough, I actually, some kid, this is so weird, this has just happened today, but just today, somebody sent me, $20 or whatever, and they're like, hey, we're gonna use your artwork for some thing. And I was like, well, and I told him a year and a half ago that if he paid me $20, I'd let him use a photo that I took of my iPhone. And he just paid me today, like about an hour before this interview. So really funny, God. Man. So weird.
And that's another, to your point, is different streams of revenue is so important.
Yeah, exactly, dude. So, like, maybe one day I'll start just selling my artwork, you know.
That'd be cool. And you really never know.
Yeah, you never know, man. And the only way you'll find out is just by releasing a lot of stuff, dude, and just seeing where it goes.
Exactly. You know? Just trying it, and if it fails, move on to the next thing. Don't get too hung up on it.
No, amen, dude. It's so true.
Yeah, I've always had that fear, because it's like when I used to use, like, a lot of samples before I started working with my stepbrother, it was always kind of like iffy, because you'd post a beat, you'd be like, am I going to get a claim for this one today? And then you'd be like, oh, nope, you're good. Photos have always been a little nerve-wracking.
Well, some people use videos and stuff like that too, but you know what, again, man, like, there's so many dope photographers on Instagram and things like that, that sometimes I'm like, I feel like producers should collaborate with photographers. Like, hey, just send them a DM and be like, yo, if I use, like, your photos for my beats, do you want to, I'll just, like, tag you on Instagram, or maybe even you can give them, like, a really small royalty, because some photographers are so, so good. And I do think that having good photos will help you. I do believe that, you know?
And that's the thing I hate about, I wouldn't say hate, but in this day and age, there's so much talent and there's so many people out there that are just insane, but they don't know how to get themselves out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's kind of like, it just makes me wonder how many people out there are, like, doing something right now that is just insanely, like, game changing, and that it might never be heard.
Yeah, it's true, man. It's true. Like, you have to not only get really good at your craft, but you have to kind of get creative with ways of getting your work out there. I totally agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Whether that be, I mean, I've never done any. Have you ever done, like, paid marketing for your music?
Not really. I've done a couple Instagram posts where, like, my Instagram is basically me just playing guitar. Like, you know, I'll play guitar to some of my beats. I've done a couple paid Instagram posts, but not really anything as far as, like, putting out Facebook ads or anything like that for my YouTube. No, I've never done that.
Yeah. I haven't dabbled in it either.
It's always been pretty organic.
Yeah. I've been curious, though. It's kind of like, okay, it's like all this organic growth. Well, what if you did try and do, like, some real marketing? I don't know. So that's
It's true, man. Like, there are ways to kind of level up, and there are ways to kind of, like, always take it to the next level, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've dabbled in ClickFunnels before, which I don't know if you've seen that before, but, like, Gabe from Legion Beats, he has, like, this whole course where it's kind of like selling bundles to rappers, or like, rappers and singers, where you could take, like, 20 or 30 of your beats and sort of, like, sell them for a lower price point. And I sell them to a lot of people who wouldn't really be interested in buying, like, my full beats. And I've had success with ClickFunnels for sure. Nothing too crazy, but there's always different ways to sort of look into, like, monetizing your art and just having more and more people on board with what you do.
So. Yeah, me and my stepbrother actually, or he just did, like, he got the course for that, and we've been doing it for the ClickFunnels. And one thing that I've so far pulled from it is the fact of getting emails, because it's like right now, I mean, I don't know about you, but for us at least, our income and everything is banking on BeatStars and YouTube, because if they went out of business tomorrow, I would lose everything.
Right, for sure.
So it's kind of like, okay, how can you have just one more thing in your back pocket that might not be as profitable?
Yeah.
But if I have a bunch of emails, I can, you know, give people codes and free beats and just kind of give people deals.
Yeah, I think
still
I think
that outlet.
Even if you're not using like a ClickFunnels, which is giving you offers per se, I think a really good practice is just collecting emails, man. Because like, even if you just have something in your email or in your YouTube that says like, hey, for like one free beat, just give me your email, you know, like, because if YouTube ever went away one day, if you still had like 1,000 or 2,000 or 20,000 people, eventually, if you collect emails for like 10 years, people who bought beats from you are interested, like, you could always just send out beats to your email list, you know? So it's never a bad idea, man. Like, it, the same way you back up your beats, you should back up your clients, you know? You should back up your viewers. You know what I mean?
at the end of the day, if you kind of, like, look in your transaction history and the amount of emails you checked, I mean, it's numbers up in the thousands. And it's kind of like, okay, that's a lot of people. So it's,
Yeah, for sure, man. Like, you always have to be thinking one step ahead. And I think that's kind of like the name of the game as an entrepreneur, you know, because something can be going really great right now. But I'm a little bit like OCD as a person as far as like trying to make sure that everything is super airtight, because as much as I love being a full-time producer and like it's going really, really well, I just want to make sure that there's longevity to it and that you can scale it. And like, you know, there can't be a cap to what you're doing, because if there's a cap, then once you hit it, you can only go down.
Exactly. And that's like, that is my biggest fear. It's kind of like climbing this ladder and then just slowly going down it. It's kind of like, you don't really ever want to hit that point. So
yeah,
it is kind
of what I always tell myself, man. And like, that's why, like, you know, I don't go crazy with paid ads or whatever, or like sometimes in the days I'm not motivated, I always just say to myself, like, if I'm just releasing good beats and I'm releasing good music that people want to write to and are vibing to, aka like just valuable content, then I don't think you'll ever go wrong, man. Because the only way you really make money is if somebody pays you for something that you've done or something that you have. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, if they want to write to your beats and they want to put that on the album, then they're going to pay you for it. And you have to be able to have great beats and give out value to that. So I don't think in terms of like, how do I make a million or $1 billion? I think of like, man, if I can positively influence like a million people with these beats, then I'll probably be fine. You know, that's a good mindset to have. It's always helped me a lot.
Yeah. And I think another thing that I always used to struggle with was, to your point, when you have a skill that other people value and they are relying on. So it's kind of like, don't sell yourself short. I mean, you have a skill. Don't be like, yeah, I'm going to just throw away beats for this price because I want to please people. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Dude, you know where I feel that way, though? I feel like for me, like, I'll do bundles with some of my beats, like some of my super old beats or whatever. Like, you know, if they're kind of just sitting on my YouTube channel, I'll you know, mess around with the prices and try to give them, like, hey, like, I'll give you 10 beats or whatever. But one thing I really kind of struggle with, and I've kind of ultimately feel like I'm not doing right now, is making my own loops. Because people have asked me so many times, like, hey, like, can I buy some of your guitar loops or for acoustic guitar or electric guitar? And I'm always like, man, I could totally do that. And I feel like I make a killing. But I kind of feel like for me, as somebody who is a producer in the sense like I play my own instruments, like if I do that, I'm sort of selling my own sound. And I feel like with royalties and all that stuff, it's going to get really, really confusing if I start selling my own loops. So I've always kind of like kind of stepped away from doing that. You know, I feel like it might get a little tricky, you know, and I kind of like the fact that like I have a certain sound that I keep mine, you know, that I don't want to sell and give to somebody else. So,
and people are desiring that. Yeah, I've always been hesitant, and we're putting out a like a sample pack, and I'm just super curious to see how it's gonna go. You know,
yeah,
that is a direction I've never gone in. I don't know if it's gonna be profitable or.
So, samples, are they drum samples or are they like melodies and stuff like that?
No,
or?
Melodies. Yeah, it's gonna be melodies from, you know, stuff we've used, stuff we've made, pulling from full like compositions and stuff.
Oh,
like
that's
that.
Okay. That's pretty sweet though. I mean, the thing is, man, like again, there are producers out there who don't even make beats. They literally just make sample packs. I mean, think about
it.
Oh my
God, yeah.
And you can do that, and you can do that full time, you know. And but it's the same way of like selling beats. You know, you gotta know how to create a fan base and just create packs that people want, and just go from it for there. You know,
exactly. Yeah. So. And for me, it's kind of like the way I see it is it's a nice little side hustle. The beats are obviously the front point because that's what people like.
Right.
But there, you might get those 15, 20 producers who are like, "Oh, I like your samples. I'm gonna buy them from you." So.
Right. Right. Right.
And it doesn't really take too much extra work. You put them all together and you monetize it. So.
Yes, sir. True.
Yep. You got to sell the same thing as many times as you possibly can.
Dude, I mean, that's the name of the game, man. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, I sell exclusives still now and then, but like, I kind of stopped selling exclusives because of the that same idea where, like, if a beat's just going crazy and it's still got, like, 50,000, 100,000, 300,000, like, half a million, dude, like, I don't know, man. Like, I refuse. Like, even the snot beat, like, he wanted this beat of mine called Caress, which has, like, 600,000 views on YouTube. He's like, yo, I want the exclusive. And I was just like, no, I don't care how big it is. I can't do it. So what we did was we just negotiated a sample. You know what I mean? Like, we basically just said, like, okay, we'll just write that you got it as a sample for me. You know what I mean? Or I'll just license it out to you. And if you can just keep licensing it, but you can hold on to the rights, I think that's the name of the game for producers right now.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. There's so much value in having a catalog for as long as you can.
Yeah.
Because you can sell those beats for the rest of your life.
Yeah, man, we're early. Like, we're really early in this game. Like, I think, you know, and there have been times where I've sold beats for exclusive, like, a couple $100 or whatever, and I look back and I'm like, man, I kind of regret selling that, because if I kept it, you'd probably keep leasing it out, you know? And yeah, it's not and even about the money, too. Like, other people really want to creatively use some things, and who knows how great some of those songs could have been, man. Like, you know, but it's kind of off limits now.
Exactly, and it's like, that's the way I used to, when I first started the channel, it was pricing my exclusives on a fixed rate. But any producers out there, I highly recommend to do them negotiations only and do the calculations on how much that beat will make you a year.
Yeah.
And 2 years down the road, 3 years. And you'd be surprised. The numbers are pretty big.
Yeah. And the YouTube algorithm is so unpredictable, man. Like, I've had beats that have been sitting there for 2 months and all of a sudden they'll go up. And I'll be like, all right, well, apparently this beat's doing pretty well now.
Yeah, you know, look in your analytics and I'm like, when the heck did this thing blow up?
Yeah. You never know when all of a sudden something's going to happen. It's going to just pop off. So you might as well hold on to it for as long as you can.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
You know.
Definitely. So I got a couple, like, closing questions to wind down.
All right, cool, man.
Head out. But if you had a dream collaboration with any artist or band in the world, who would it be?
That's a good question. I come from a background where I grew up loving bands like The Doors, like classic rock and stuff like that. So I love The Doors. But I feel like more modern, man, I'd probably say somebody like John Mayer or somebody like that.
Oh,
like,
that'd be yeah, fun.
I feel like somebody like, if I can, I mean, I'm a guitar player, obviously, but if I could just get in a room with somebody like that, who's not only a great guitar player, but a great songwriter and somebody whose sort of like career path I admire, then I would probably do somebody like that. You know, but I also love a lot of like female R&B singers, which are like really, really good. And there's so much good music out there right now, man. Like, I feel like my taste, if you look at my Spotify playlist that I put together, they're so ADD. You know, I feel like that's just like of our generation, where we can't pick one lane to listen to. We just love all types of stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you can shuffle and find some insane trap music or some really, really sad music within my playlist.
Yeah, for sure. Way. Like, my girlfriend loves, like, country music, and she's obsessed with Casey Musgraves, and, like, she's amazing, dude. Like, I listen to that kind of stuff all the time. Like, recently I've almost been getting more into, like, country music on the radio and things like that. And it's funny because, like, they all those songs are such songs, you know what I mean? And they're all recorded in these Nashville studios that are worth, like, $1 million and everything. From a producer standpoint, it's, like, everything is, like, quote-unquote perfect music, you know?
Yeah, so, like, it's
that's
insane.
Really cool, too. But also, like, I love Ariana Grande and Dua Lipa and, like, Justin Bieber. And yeah, I listen to, like, pop radio all the time. So, like, any of those people would be so dope, you know?
Yeah, honestly. and then the bedroom, you know, the bedroom artists are, like, some of my favorites.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
Some of these people, the records they're cranking out in, you know, a small little bedroom in the suburbs.
Can 100%, dude. 100%, man. I love, like, that Mac DeMarco and, like, what you were saying, like, Role Model. Those guys are awesome, dude. Like, there's a whole different, like, part of my brain that like would only listen to that, like my like Washed Out. I love bands like Toro y Moi and Washed Out, and you know, they're just like the best, man. Like original like a neon Indian, you know, like electronic indie chill music. So good. I love all that stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's just there's so many music has finally become, I think, a path like you can take in life now. Whereas the doors are open, you can be an audio engineer, you can be a producer, you can be an artist, you can a music video maker. There's so many ways to get into the game and make money off of it.
I totally agree, man. I totally agree. That's why it's cool, man. That's why like I'm honored to even do this interview, because I feel like it's not only about making a career, it's not only about just like doing what you love, it's about meeting people who are sort of doing the same thing and like inspiring each other and just like sort of using each other to like stay motivated, but also to learn from, you know?
And that's been one of, if not my favorite part about this, is like, the first person I met was Stoic, and then you start to meet, you know, versus you and all these other people, and it's like it started off as just kind of like, oh, send me some samples, let's make a beat. And then it turns into a legitimate, you know, relationship where you're talking and you're becoming friends and you're getting to know each other. And it's not, to your point, you're talking about taxes, you're talking about what you're doing later, you know. It's cool to see that, because no one really notices that in the tight beat scene there's a whole community.
Like, I'm from Albany, and like, well, even it was like 2 years ago when I first started selling beats, I went to Montreal for a day trip, and I met up with my buddy Mo. He lives over in Montreal, and he's a producer and like a singer, and he's just like, he does playlists for these art galleries and things like that. And he was one of the first people that I'd ever met through YouTube, kind of like, where he texted me, he's like, oh, you're in Montreal, we should hang out. And like, we met up at like a restaurant or a bar or whatever, and we just kind of like talked about music for like an hour or two. And it was just really cool, because it sort of is like, because I decided to share beats with the world, I met this guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's such a cool concept. Like, same with like, just talking to you.
It's so crazy. Yeah, it's crazy to think about that stuff. And same with artists you meet, and just having these opportunities and these moments where it's like, this would not be possible if you never did this one thing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. I totally agree. I love it. It's a really cool community. Makes life
feel crazy.
Yeah, it's a really cool community.
And then I guess the last question, this is one, I don't know how important it is but to you, but like a dream studio. If you had to pick like a place or a type of studio to be, where would that be, or what would it look like?
Man, my dream studios sometimes are just like any place that has a lot of natural light and a place where I can kind of be like indoors and outdoors, you know? Like, that's why I love this apartment I'm in right now, because like, I'm right next to this huge porch where I just leave this door open during the day, and I feel like I'm like in my zone, because I'm comfortable recording inside, but there's also like outdoor vibes. Because when I first started recording music, like, I would go to my parents' shed. They had like this huge shed in the back of their backyard. And I would like set up my recorders in the shed. And I felt like it was really cool, because music, it was portable, you know, like having an acoustic guitar, you could just go out into the woods and just like sit down and create music, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why for me, like, another thing with the minimalism, the iPhone is like, you can record music kind of anywhere. And that's really attractive to me, because as soon as you're inspired, you can like just take out your voice memos or take out your iPhone and just like, you know, whether it's capturing an idea or actually creating a recording that'll be a beat, it's anywhere, you know? But also, I love upstate. I love California. I love anywhere by the ocean. Like, there's so many cool spots, you know? I like to move around, you know?
No, I agree. I'm the same way. It's kind of like, I don't really like to sit still too long. So it's kind of being able to grab everything and go is definitely a necessary thing.
Anywhere I can basically make a beat, and then I could step outside for like a half an hour and just like walk around, and then like maybe drink some water, drink some coffee, and sit back down and be in the zone, you know? Any place I can just feel undistracted and feel like I'm myself, you know? And if I'm recording vocals, like, any place, no one can hear me recording vocals, because then, you know what I mean? I feel kind of weird, but
I'm the same way. Like, I don't, like, even when it comes to podcasts or vocals, or even like just jotting, like making ideas with my voice. True. I, like, if my roommate's home, I'm like, maybe not right now. I'll wait till he leaves.
I think it's that idea, like, you know, it's going to be good, but it's not ready yet. It's like, don't listen to, like my girlfriend, she's also a photographer, and like, she hates showing me photos that aren't edited and stuff yet. And I kind of get it, because it's kind of like listening to a song before it's mixed, or it's kind of like listening to vocals before, like, raw vocal takes, where you're like, no, like, I know that this sounds really lame, but it's gonna be so sick once I, like, you know, pitch it and put it in there with like a phaser or whatever. Like, you gotta trust the process.
The littlest mixing things can like make the song a million times better than it was,
right? 100%. You gotta trust the process, man.
Yep, without a doubt.
So but thanks, man, I appreciate it. Like, this whole, it's been awesome, dude, and meeting you too has been great.
Yeah, dude, this is fun, and I hope it turns into a relationship, and we talk more and stuff like that, because I just, like I said, this production community is something that, like, I was so unaware of.
Yeah,
and it's cool to see it all.
Yes, sir. Unravel. Yeah, it's been great, man.
But yeah, man, I really appreciate you coming and or coming on here and talking and sharing your story and all of that. So
yeah, and thank you, man. Thanks for having me. The podcast has been great so far. So
of course, thank, man, you, and Yuri. Maybe. Yeah, down the road, we'll maybe get episode 2. I think the people might like that.
Sounds like a plan, dude. I'm always down, man. I'm always down. Be well.
Cool, man. You too.
All right, cool. Take care, bro.